It is time for another episode of Africa Analysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. They are very involved all over Africa, and there's no better way for you to get to grips with this continent and all the massive opportunities, possibilities it can bring your way from a business point of view and all kinds of other things. It's also good to know about your immediate environment. There aren't a lot of media outlets that focus on Africa, and we do it here every 2 weeks on Podcast Party. .co.za. You can find out more by going along to all of our different places, the normal places you'd get podcasts, and make sure you don't miss this one. Subscribe, and you can be a part of it every 2 weeks. Now, we manage to wrestle some time away from JJ Cornish every 2 weeks, and he is here today to tell us about some more interesting things from the continent of Africa. JJ, it's nice to see you. How are you?
Good to be back. I'm immensely well, thank you.
Excellent. So let us start in Uganda, a country with a very, very difficult past. I think it's right, and you can correct me if I'm not right, that since Idi Amin, there's only been one guy in charge the whole time.
No, Milton Obote took over from Idi Amin.
Ah, okay. Two guys.
It was 50 years ago that I met Idi Amin at the very United Nations General Assembly, which is sitting down here now. I gate crashed his dinner and walked up to him and told him, I have not been invited to your dinner, but I've decided I want to come here to meet you. He said to me, "Are you racist?" I said, "I don't believe I am, sir." Then he said, "You are welcome."
Wow.
he pitched up at the UN and I mean, everybody was absolutely scandalized that he should be received with such euphoria by the African group. They were delighted to have him there, and as I say, it was he shook my hand and said, "You are welcome."
Well, I'm glad he didn't eat you, that's all.
Or feed me to his crocodiles.
Feed you to his crocodiles. But I mean, he's probably the most interesting guy, not always in a good way, that's ruled Uganda. The reason I said what I said at the beginning is probably because I've assumed that Yoweri Museveni has been there so long that he must have taken over straight away from Idi Amin in the 70s. But he has had seven terms as president, right?
He's going for his seventh. He's been there since 1986. So he's been there a while, 40 years. Wow. And it's quite amazing. And his son, who is Muhoozi Kainerubaga, he's now the head of their defense force. But he was to stand with the next elections in 2026, but he's decided not to. The Lord has told him, no, you've got to maintain your command of the defense forces, and you must help your father's next presidential bid, which is for his seventh term.
All right, so the son wants to take over from the father, but then he decides, no, I'm not going to stand against my dad. What convinced him? What persuaded him not to stand against his own father in the election?
The word of the Lord. As in all things wicked in Uganda, God tells you to do it, you know. I mean, I suppose God might tell him to go and treat Bobby Wine badly, because, you know, Bobby Wine is in a bit of trouble at the moment.
Yeah.
Bobby Wine is the most serious contender to Yoweri Museveni. And I don't know if Yoweri felt that he was the only guy that could keep Bobby Wine out, because he was the guy that actually seemed to be passing the baton to Muhoozi. But not this time. So we're in for at least another term round. Now, in 2021, there were 50 deaths in that election, because Yoweri Museveni doesn't play... he doesn't play nice guy with elections. He won with 58% of the vote. At least he doesn't pretend to get, 90% or something. But he's a bad guy, there's no doubt. I remember the times I was working on the Sunday Independent, and they had a very bright correspondent there who kept aligning or likening Yoweri Museveni to Madiba, and I remember railing against that and writing against it. And people said, "You can't do this. You can't maintain that Madiba is the best African leader. People like Yoweri Museveni deserve their place too." Well, you know, not only do they deserve their place, but he threw out his anchor and he's hanging on to the chain to this day.
You know, it's amazing to me. I mean, the guy's been there so long that, he used to wear a hat, almost like a kind of a frontier, almost American yes. parks and recreation hat. Does he still wear that? Because he must be very old now. He must be in his 70s, 80s even.
He still does. He disports himself with quite a lot of vigor, although it's a little while now since I've seen him. But he was, you know, at meetings and so on, he'd wear that hat. Yeah. The other one, of course, Salva Kiir, South Sudan, also man, wears that big, huge big hat, keeping the sun off him. Yeah. But no, Yoweri Museveni, he is, well, I don't know his exact age, but he must be well into his 80s or even his 90s by now. And that's probably why I thought he should hand over. But again, people, real challengers like Bobby Wine come along. I think he thinks I'm the only guy. You know, when you develop that belief that you're the only person that can run the country, I think it was Barack Obama who said, anybody who can't do what he has to do as president in two terms doesn't deserve to be there. You've got to boot him out.
Well, I call it Mugabe syndrome, but we all know how that story ended. Let's talk about Egypt, because that corner of the continent seems beset with all kinds of troubles. Ethiopia still, Somaliland, Somalia, and now Egypt are telling their own people to get out of Somaliland.
As quickly as possible, they say. Go out of Hargeisa, which is the airport in the capital of Somaliland. Get out as soon as you can. The thing is, of course, now Somaliland was got independence as British Somalia in 1960. And the same as the Italian Somalia got independence the same time. Then the two of them joined together. I don't know if I've told you this tale before. Maybe I have. To form the Greater Somalia. That didn't happen. They were going to take parts of Kenya and form the Greater Somalia. So Somaliland gave up its sort of independence, so to speak, in the name of a greater cause. Didn't happen. Siad Barre took over. It was a coup. He took over, and he was a complete monster. And he turned on Somaliland, and he hit Hargeisa so badly that people say not one stone stood on another. The way he used Hargeisa Airport, the very airport that the Egyptians have to now escape to or from, to bomb the city of Hargeisa. So Siad Barre used his air force bombing the capital of Somaliland from Hargeisa Airport. Shocking. So clearly when Siad Barre fell, yes?
Just remind me, what are the main reasons for Somaliland and Somalia having their differences? Is it cultural? Is it ethnic? Is it language? Is it religious? What's the main line of division there?
Well, the line of division being that the Somalilanders are different from the Somalis, or believe so, and then they had a greater hold. If you look at the Horn of Africa, that's seven, as it were. The top of the seven is Somaliland, and then there's Puntland, and then you go on to other territories. The point is, though, Siad Barre jealously wanted to promote Somalia, and that's why, at the cost of the Somalilanders. That's why when he fell, the Somalilanders immediately declared independence. But in the interim, in that period between his fall in 91 and 1960, the African Organization of African Unity decided the only way they were going to clear up this whole colonial mess was to declare colonial boundaries sacrosanct. In other words, you could not gainsay them or counter them. The only one that's been able to do that, though, is Sudan, after one of the longest civil wars in Africa, and they allowed South Sudan to secede. It has been a difficult situation for them, too. But Somaliland has had five elections now. I've observed three of those, and they're a genuine democracy. But the OAU will not recognize them, and no African power, South Africa would like to, Ethiopia would like to. But they always say, we will be the second to recognize you. Somebody else has to take the lion's share first, or take the brave step first. So that's the situation. But now what Somaliland has done, it has given or ceded or leased to Ethiopia, which is landlocked because of their war with Eritrea. They've now a huge country, but landlocked. They've leased a huge section of their coastal strip along the Red Sea for Ethiopia to create a naval base. And that has sincerely pissed off the Somalians, and they are saying, you know, we are now at daggers drawn with Ethiopia. Our sovereignty is sacrosanct, and there are many within the African Union now that still agree on Somalian sovereignty and sovereignty over Somaliland, which is an error. There are lots of Western powers are present in Somaliland, but clearly they can't recognize Somaliland, you know, and run it, fly in the face of the whole African Union. So it's a fraught issue, but this is it could be developing into a fighting war if it doesn't quieten down now. And that is why Egypt has said to its people, get out now, because it's becoming unsafe.
Wow. That part of Africa is just fraught with problems, and who knows who's going to be able to solve them. But I'm glad for the update from you. Just one last thing before we go. Apparently, there's been a research center in Guinea that was ransacked by locals. Chimpanzees can be very dangerous. People forget this. A chimpanzee killed a worker's baby, so they decided, yes, we're tearing this place apart, and they did.
I hope you didn't read and think that I was going to give you a happy animal story to end it, because it's a very sad one. This is the Nimba Mountain Nature Reserve. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. You know, the chimpanzees and their numbers have fallen 80% between 1990 and 2014. 80%. So they radically endangered. And they're in this research station, UNESCO Heritage Site Research Station, working to forward advance the cause of the chimpanzees and to help them to increase their numbers. And but the problem is the food around that area, and you know, there's droughts. I mean, the three areas where they have them are Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone. That's where the chimpanzees are located. And as you say, they're very dangerous. They turn on people, and they've been moving out of their safe zones because they have no food, moving into the human settlements. And there have been 6 attacks on humans this year by chimpanzees. But there was this woman digging up cassava, you know, in the cassava field. She put her baby to one side. The chimpanzee came up to her, bit her, grabbed her infant baby and took it off and killed it. So the locals have just gone berserk and broken up the research station. They're absolutely incensed. But a very, very, very sad story. Very sad for the endangered species, but, you know, just as sad for the humans, and a sad story to end on, I'm afraid.
Well, it's not always good news. We're all adults, though. We can accept that. Thank you for trying. And that is that is a look at some of the stories. I'm sure there are many more, but we're out of time. JJ Cornish, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
And this is brought to you, this African Analysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. Make sure you join us in 2 weeks' time when we get to hear some more of these interesting stories from JJ.